Hello, everyone. This is Catherine Buckaloo, and you are listening to Truth Connections Radio. Check out our new website at truthconnections.com. We are still adding content there and changing the site up a little bit in the future. More things will be added. Tonight's guest is Leo Lion Zagami, writer, researcher, and expert in all of the topics we are going to cover in tonight's broadcast. Leo was born into an aristocratic family. Being from an Illuminati bloodline, he became a 33-degree Mason and a true insider of the famous Masonic P2 Lodge. He was involved in the Illuminati Order since childhood and was being groomed as their prince, preparing to one day take over the order for the older Illuminati king, Lucio Gelli. Leo decided to leave the order he was once involved in because of all the satanic black magic rituals, mind control, and torture he witnessed going on behind the scenes. Leo is here today to discuss his book, Pope Francis, The Last Pope, Money, Masons, and Occultism in the Decline of the Catholic Church. Please welcome Leo Zagami to the show. Welcome, Leo.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for having me on.
You're very welcome. We're happy you're here. Leo, you are one of those people that I would just like to download everything that's in your brain into my brain. You have so much information, and that's another reason why I trust what you say so much. It flows so freely from you. You know, there's no possible way that you're making any of this stuff up. But so I would like to handle this broadcast in a way that we break it down, break down all the key players in your book in like a Cliff Notes version, so when the listeners go and buy your book, they will have a better understanding of what's going on. Sound good?
Yeah, sounds great.
Okay, great. Leo, also, what I find highly credible about your books, and the audience should as well, for that matter, is that in Italy, you're held accountable for what you write as facts in your books. Are you not?
Yes, that is by law, because unfortunately here we are number, I don't know, 83 probably or lower in the freedom of speech. And for that reason, you are accountable, highly accountable for every single line you write, because you can actually be arrested.
Yes, and in your book, you cite references and facts, so people can look them up for themselves, which is also very good.
Yeah, well, this is the style. It has to be absolutely everything that is written and needs to be verified by external sources or by documentation, photographs, and other material you might have, because, of course, as I said, you are talking about some very delicate subjects like the Catholic Church, the Italian government, and other governments around the world. You are publishing documents like documents from the U.S. State Department, from the CIA, from various knighthoods, as you have seen yourself on this book. So, I mean, there is a certain degree always of responsibility. You can't just throw these things in a book and publish them without really respecting the great value and the testimony of these documents.
Absolutely. None of it is fiction, that is for sure.
No, there is no need for fiction. We have reality is stronger than any fiction by Dan Brown a million times. I mean, it's just like he's scraping the surface when he does his books.
Let's first begin. I mean, you've had a very busy year, haven't you, Leo? Lots going on. You've not only got married, but you had your first wedding anniversary, and your books are being placed in English when they weren't available in the English version for quite a while. Isn't that exciting for you?
Yeah, most of all, it's a great amount of work that has been conducted since we have been back from the U.S. last year until now. And this work will continue for another at least a couple of years to be able to translate all these works. And of course, we will bring out one book a season. That is our objective with our publisher, CCC Publishing in San Francisco. And this will bring then in total of five books, which is basically the four volumes of my confessions and this book that we are discussing today, which is Pope Francis, the Last Pope. These books can be read each one on their own, but it would be better if you start from this one that we're discussing today and then you proceed to have then a full preparation, a gradual preparation that will arm you with knowledge, a very powerful knowledge. For the first time in the English language, there is a knowledge that comes from right behind the scenes, you know. So a lot of people can be doubtful at first, but of course, like you saw yourself, everything is cross-referenced, cited, and documented. So this will really bring our whole conspiracy theory scene we have nowadays with these so-called conspiracy theories to what I am doing instead, which is called conspiracy reality, which is something that we have coined a few years back with Varo Venturi, which is a film director from Rome, which I have collaborated in the past. And so we have, our intention is to bring you in real time those facts, not fiction, those people, those names, those you can see them then in the newspapers, in the and everything is happening really in real time. This end of time scenario is really a fruit of what you know as the revolution would be televised in a way, but in this case is reported in a book, because unfortunately TV is under the control of the system and can't be used as a medium, as well as the internet is something that can of course bring out things that are not censored. We have seen it in various cases, but because there is so much information on the internet, it can of course get lost in this great sea of information. A book is always a book, and I think, like the great Latins used to say, scripta manent, which means that the writing stays and stays and the and has also a validity in the stands the test of time. And I hope that with these books that I'm bringing out, I will gradually bring the academic world in the Anglo-Saxon world towards also discussing these subjects, because at the moment we have a lot of theory but not really any evidence. And once you bring out the evidence, you bring out this hidden world, then it's time to discuss all everything we find. In Pope Francis, the Last Pope, as you can see, I start by describing this historical moment of great importance, which is the moment in which Ratzinger gives up his Petrine ministry. And then comes in this this Abemus George, I said in the title of the chapter one, because we have this Pope from the end of the world, which is Jorge Mario Bergoglio. And the interesting thing is that he becomes this Pope Francis. And then I describe also in my book why he is Pope Francis, which is not only Saint Francis, but is also another Francis involved in the Jesuit tradition. There is many interesting things that I don't think are particularly known in the English-speaking world. Starting, though, at the beginning of the book, you saw immediately I went into the interview with Zanardi and immediately discussing the most sordid details of the behind-the-scenes gay lobby and what is really happening in the Vatican nowadays, beyond the facade of this Pope Francis, which a lot of people like because he's a great actor, as Verbisky, this famous Argentinian journalist who knows him very well, used to say. So, I mean, the great refusal of Ratzinger is not something that just happened. It happened, and I demonstrate in this book how it happened. It happens because there is a series of reasons, a series of scandals. He's been basically blackmailed to step down and give all the power, at least to the Jesuits, because they stepped in a bit like their secret service needs to step in a moment of great and disturbing decline. That is why this is the decline of the Catholic Church, which seems nowadays unstoppable. While before these scandals rarely came to the surface, here in Italy is almost a weekly, if not daily, occurrence that these scandals involving pedophile priests, involving corruption in the Vatican finances, and all that. I mean, probably since Pope Francis came into power, they have actually managed to, with a series of changes, silence the corruption regarding the Vatican finances, the Vatican Bank. But they haven't managed to stop the decline of the morals. And of course, this Satanist, because there is a clear link, like even the gay Pope Tarcisio Bertone himself said, between pedophilia and Satanism. So I think that we have to read my book to understand really what's going on. And then at that point, you can place yourself better also in what is becoming a sort of universal church, because their intentions is really to put together all the religions under one kind of parliament of religion. No, this is the intentions also of the of Israel. Of is a strong intentions of Israel to do this. So it's not only the Vatican. We have, as I show also in this book, even if, of course, it's not one of the main subjects, but I also show the link which these various religions have with each other. No, we have the Jewish one, we have the Islamic religion, and the Islamic religion, as you can see in my book, is present beyond the people's wildest dreams at the heart of the Vatican. And so this means that there is actually cardinals in the Vatican that have changed their religion.
30 or 40 cardinals, you said?
Yes, and these cardinals are, like I said, on the surface, of course, Catholic, but in reality they practice the Muslim faith and they think of themselves in secret as Muslims. This incompatibility is only on the surface, because they think about just a religion in decline needs eventually to be substituted with a rising religion, no? A religion that is rising in power, like the Muslim faith. And they know that if it continues like this, in 50 years, 100 years, Europe will be prevalently a Muslim region. The whole of Europe. People.
Didn't someone say that they're going to one day fly the Muslim flag on the Vatican?
They want to fly. Yes, they want to absolutely place the Muslim flag. I put actually the image of their own newspaper, as you have seen in the book. And I show basically that ISIS is born out of a compromise also and out of the corruption of a specific Masonic lodge. They are really breaking down Western civilization in a particular moment of history where they want to materialize the Holy Scriptures, you see?
Yes, the prophecy, is that involving the prophecy?
Absolutely. In fact, I also mention in my book what Ali Akhshar has said about this Islamic fundamentalists that are actually pushing towards all this chaos and this destruction, because they want to accelerate the time for the return of the Mahdi. And of course, he's the Mahdi is supposed to be the helper of the Messiah, and then, of course, the Messiah. So it's quite interesting also how ISIS has been created by, you know, by USA, Israel,
CIA.
And some by USA, Israel, and some Arab states. This is what actually Father Ntanios Haddad, who is the Melkite Greek Catholic Church representative in Rome, who knows very well these areas in Iraq and Syria. He said it himself. I mean, this is not an accusation made by a conspiracy theorist, but this is made by a very serious representative of the Eastern Church communities in the so in the heart also of Europe. I mean, we have to understand that the message is very strong and clear. ISIS is a monster created by USA, Israel, but also by this Atropentalpha Lodge, which is itself the creation of the military industrial complex.
Isn't the Turkish Secret Service also involved?
Involved, we have also the Turkish Secret Service. We have the fact that al-Baghdadi was initiated in 2009. You see, al-Baghdadi became between 2004 and 2009 a leading figure within the prison structure in Iraq. And all the USA, you know, security forces, when there was a problem in the church, in the prisons in Iraq, they will ask al-Baghdadi to sort it out. No wonder that in 2009 they actually initiate him in this lodge. And we have evidence of this initiation by the witness of an ex-worship or a past worship or master of an important lodge in Rome called the Lodge Montesion, Gioele Magaldi. And basically, thanks to his testimony and his documents that he has deposited in three different cities to make sure they will not be eliminated. And these cities are, I think, London, Paris, and New York. Basically, he says to have evidence of this Masonic membership. And also, I mean, Atropentalpha was involved in 9/11, and within it, you have all the Bush family establishment, which I also connect at the beginning of this book, Pope Francis the Last Pope, to Jeb Bush, which is, of course, also a prominent member of the Knights of Columbus, which are the ones that in the Vatican are sitting in power in the Vatican Bank with their Grand Master, who is actually in the board of the Vatican Bank, and so he has a prominent role in it, the Grand Master, who himself, of course, works with Jeb Bush.
I actually met Jeb Bush, Leo.
So what do you think of Jeb Bush?
I was not impressed. He really gave me the creeps, and I will send. I discuss it in a show that I did about my story, and I'll send that to Christy so you guys can hear that. It's on our YouTube channel. I was not impressed. I was a broker, and I was working late at night, calling clients in Hawaii, and it was just me in there, my manager, and it was about 9 o'clock at night, and I didn't see him come in. No one came in with him, but my manager's office was like a fishbowl. You know, you could see, you know, who was in there. And I saw the back of this man, and my manager called me and said, "Kathy, come in here. I want you to meet somebody." And when I went in there, he was there. And, you know, he wasn't there to buy stock. He was probably there to do a lot of other things. You know, he had an envelope in his hand, and I can only assume what that meant. And there was no one with him, ironically. And, you know, that was in the late 90s. So he was governor, pretty close to becoming governor at the time. So you would think he'd have people with him that late at night in an office in Boca Raton, you know? Very strange. I don't want to get into any more of that now, because this is your party.
No, well, I mean, you have to understand the Bushes are quite known to really not take care much of their security. Watch the recent scandal with the place where they actually were living in Washington, which was with no security for, I think, 11 months without any security systems within the house. And this is because the Bushes are really, their security is taken care very well with some, apart from very occult means, but the whole fraternity of the Skull and Bones, which and also, the you know, has always sit on top of the CIA. Bush father was head of the CIA. And so basically George Walker Bush and now Jeb Bush, they're people who don't need really security. Who I mean... who you want to go and touch. I mean, these people are like, you know, so powerful that at that level, I think that nobody ever dares to touch this kind of people.
You know,
and
it's
so
oh, go
I
ahead.
think that's the reason for him not having that kind of protection you might think, you see, because he doesn't really need it.
You know, it's funny. I don't mean to keep jumping around with the topics. We kind of went right into my last page of notes. We didn't get to the first page of notes yet. But when I was reading your book, it was very reminiscent when you were talking about Pope Ratzinger. It kind of, you know, that his tentacles are still involved very much in the Vatican. It kind of reminded me of Bush Sr. and his tentacles still being involved in the White House, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. And he's still trying to get in power because, I mean, with Jeb Bush, they have basically the guy who is closer to Carl Anderson, the Supreme Knight Grandmaster of the Knights of Columbus. At the same time, both the father and the brother are members of the Skull and Bones. So an important point of contact, I would say, between two different realities. One is the more Protestant one, the other one the more Catholic one. In any case, the figure of Don Quixote, which is made famous also by the initiations that were made public a few years ago of the Skull and Bones. This Don Quixote is a figure made famous, of course, by also Jesuit student, which was Miguel de Cervantes, and he is also represented in the actual lodge during the ritual of the Skull and Bones. And that's not a coincidence that something created by a Jesuit student that actually they say it should be actually Ignatius Loyola, the founder of the Jesuits, this figure for how Don Quixote is represented. In reality, it was Ignatius Loyola. But I talk also of who is in reality the founder of the Jesuits, and beyond any speculation, I actually bring in the fact that he was arrested by the Inquisition, that the Jesuits have been kicked out of several states. Ignazio Loyola, in the end, after being arrested 5 times by the Inquisition, finally found a pope that he convinced to found his order. I mean, to have the blessings to find to be able to found his order, because he was a magician, because he was an occultist. So this is also something connected directly to this pope, who is the first Jesuit pope in history, Pope Francis. At the same time, we have still the hidden hand of Ratzinger and the gay lobby at work in the Vatican. They are the other powerful lobby at the moment there, together with the Jesuits. But at times, they are on opposite factions.
Yes, he is the first Jesuit pope, and also the first from South America, and he has CIA ties, correct?
Well, sorry, first pope from South America?
Is he the first, isn't Pope Francis the first pope from South America?
Yes, I think absolutely, because you are talking about an office, the one of the pope, that up until not so long ago was nearly exclusively basically covered by Italian members, and mostly until even a century ago by the members of the Roman aristocracy, the so-called black aristocracy. So it's been in more recent times. We started with the first really foreign pope in recent times to be John Paul II. Of course, in old times, when at one point there were some schisms within the church, like in France, at one point there were like two popes. We had also, you know, like maybe pope from France, one from Italy. I mean, there was maybe in the past, if you go and study the history of the anti-popes, the periods of chaotic periods in the history of the church where you have actually more than one pope. But France is nearly as same Italy, because I mean, and it was also it is still nowadays very important part of the Catholic setup. What I want to say here is that he is for sure a novelty in the fact that he comes from the New World, because there haven't been any pope from the New World apart from South America, North America, or any America. You understand? So it's the first pope to come out of the New World. And this is a strong signal. I actually thought for a moment they would start immediately with the change that was talked about for years, which is to put directly a black pope from Africa, which is probably what they're going to do next. But that is already in a stage in which this is considered the last pope, because the moment you will do that kind of thing, there will be a complete schism in the church, and traditional Catholics will not be able to take, I think, this kind of schism. So we are at the end of the church as it is already, because of the scandals and everything else. What the next pope might be is more of a figure as Bishop of Rome of a council of world religions. That's why I say this is the last pope. This is Ratzinger, probably was already the last regular pope, because I also in the book showed that the election of Pope Francis at the fifth election was not conducted regularly, so he's not even regularly being elected. So at the moment, in reality, he's not even a regular pope. But in any case, he will be the last pope of this kind of church that we see now, being still having this kind of divine figure, because the divine figure is also being gradually destroyed with the fact that Ratzinger retired, which is not very divine to go and retire, especially if you have as example Jesus Christ on the cross, you shouldn't retire. Then we have probably Pope Francis retiring. And at that point, the divinity of the office of the Petri Minis is completely destroyed. That's why he is the last pope. The divinity of this pope, will be destroyed the moment he will resign. It will be the second resigning pope. And this is happening because they are imitating the Jesuits. The Jesuits had their first resignation with Hans Kovenbach in 2009. Then they have now Adolf Nicholas, who will resign next year in 2016. So basically, the black popes are resigning before the white popes, no? Because the Jesuit head, the Jesuit general, is called the black pope. So they are the ones who actually always in the church advance any novelties.
A pope has not, in fact, resigned in over 600 years, correct?
Yes, I mean, the resignation of the popes in the past was, I discussed it at the beginning of the book, it's an incredible thing to happen, especially because in old times this pope that resigned didn't really live that long to say the tale. I mean, and it was also very different, probably in certain ways, the great refusal of Celestine V, which is the most recent and probably the only example we have registered of a pope that abdicates. And that happened in 1294. So, I mean, quite some time ago.
It certainly is all about the public theater. You know, the people are calling him the rock star pope. He's the humble pope who wears black shoes and isn't flashy. And they're saying that he increased traffic in St. Peter's Square over three times. You know, that his popularity is three times of what the past pope was. They're certainly trying to make him look like the savior. Can you tell us why he is, in fact, not the savior?
Because, as I was mentioning at the beginning of the show, citing something that was said by this guy who wrote a very interesting book called The Island of Silence on Pope Francis, which is Verbisky, he is a great actor. He is absolutely a great actor. Yeah. And he is basically giving the people what they expect. So he is saving the facade of the church after a sudden amount, I mean, a crisis that really was catastrophic in the hands of Ratzinger and was only being amplified day after day. In the end, we know there were, the Ratzinger, Bertone, they were all cited by the International Tribunal, who then at one point, and I'm talking about the official case that was set up, not the more recent ones, but at the end they actually the victims gave up, because that's why Ratzinger really had to give up, because there was an enormous amount of money that then you have to pay to all these victims. Understand?
Absolutely.
So they, this survivors network of those abused by priests, that this was the this group, no, it was called SNAP. And in September 2011, this group of victims deposited evidence at the International Crime Court in The Hague that accused Pope Benedict XVI and Tarcisio Bertone, and also Cardinal Angelo Sodano, and the former chief of the Congregations for the Mothers of Faith, which was at the time Cardinal William Levada. And they accused them of crimes against humanity. I mean, this is a really heavy accusation, you know. And but 1 year, suddenly, before the resignation of Ratzinger, two interesting things happened. One was that this attorney, Jeff Anderson, who blamed Benedict XVI and all these people for not really doing much, but at the same time, they actually gave up on this case. And it's not really, I don't really understand why they suddenly gave up, but it was very strange what happened. And probably, who knows if amounts of money were paid, maybe not public, you understand, to shut up a few people. Because probably they could maybe have arranged some kind of deal we don't know about, because otherwise it's not really explainable why the immediate filing of the case without the need for a judgment on the subject gets issued like this. I mean, they all withdrew because they knew that, I mean, the Vatican lawyer then said that they withdrew because they knew that they would lose the case. But I mean, what kind of, you know, because they didn't want a negative decision by the court. I don't think that was possible. I mean, with so many people that were coming there, with this network of abuse people by priests, that, I mean, really, there was a lot of evidence. So,
it's like 300-page document of evidence.
There is so much evidence, but two things, as I said, happened. One was this, and the other thing that happened just a year before Pope Francis came in and Ratzinger gave up was basically that the Cardinal of Palermo, which is, of course, as we know, the place where the mafia historically, no, they reside, Palermo, like, no, and the Cardinal of Palermo said to Ratzinger, you will die in 1 year time, because there is a threat written to you that you will die in 1 year time. They found this threat written by an anonymous source. Strangely enough, it was found by the Cardinal of Palermo, and even more strange, the fact that Ratzinger, exactly 1 year later, instead of dying, he just resigned.
Yes, it's more of a metaphor than him actually dying.
It was more of a threat, like the sense, in 1 year, if you don't resign, you die.
I see.
This was basically the whole thing, you know.
Would you mind explaining what the gay lobby is for the Vatican?
Sure. I mean, the gay lobby. The gay lobby is basically it exists in the Vatican, probably since time immemorial, there always has been a gay lobby. But what has happened, the difference has been this: since the time of the Borgias, for example, no,
right,
when they could actually have kids,
exactly,
and the aristocracy hold the offices of cardinal or even pope, but still conducting a pretty regular life on the side, meaning that most of them were straight heterosexual males. Then the moment in which the rules became more, there was a sudden rise probably of power also from the gay lobby, especially when we had the Papa Montini came in, which was also the first Freemason Pope. And there was then, first there was Papa Roncalli, and then there was this Papa Montini. And Papa Montini was the one who conducted the Second Vatican Council. And he was gay himself, and he was actually very easily to blackmail from Freemasonry because of his gay affairs being registered by, you know, by Freemasons, so they could then blackmail him. And they knew where he went, in the town of Sion in Switzerland, the name, you know, the name of his lover, who was this actor, this young actor with red hair, quite famous in Italy at that time. So, I mean, this at one point even appeared on the newspapers. But in any case, we have this gay lobby that gradually has assumed more and more power. In the 80s, this guy called Monsignor Camaldo, who has been the masters of ceremony for many of the recent, up until Ratzinger. And Monsignor Camaldo, which his code name is Jessica, as Assange also wrote on WikiLeaks, works also for the CIA. That's why he has a code name. So the gay lobby has also their CIA representatives inside the Vatican. And because of the fact that they protect themselves and also their dirty secrets, because unfortunately most of them are not just gay, they are also pedophiles. And the ones who are also pedophiles, most of them are linked also to satanic sex, satanic acts, and satanic masses.
Well, so, that's how they blackmailed Ratzinger for so long, because of all the known child abuse, homosexuality, pedophilia, and prostitution trafficking that was going on.
That's what I said, that Ratzinger really, I mean, was even found with a little kid, a little boy of, I mean, very young, late at night when his car broke down, a BMW. But I mean, for example, this is something I haven't reported on my book because I didn't have factual evidence, you understand? But right. Already what I have discovered and showed in the book, like, for example, I have demonstrated how there is the biggest gay sauna is owned by the Vatican in Italy.
Interesting.
I mean, I even put the link on my book, so you can go and visit it. Uh-huh. And the place where they actually meet with the priest and this library in Piazza di Spagna called Feltrinelli, and in the philosophy and religion section, they always meet around 8 o'clock. So this priest with their gay lovers, that this is the gay lobby, is sharing these secrets, and the secrets become darker and darker. And but they have a lot of power because Tarcisio Bertone, who officially, because the thing is that what I hate about the hypocrisy of the Vatican gay lobby is that officially they are against the gay. I mean, this is, you know, this is also something.
Well, that's the official story, right?
I mean, that's, yeah, but it makes me mad, the hypocrisy of these people.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, it's like you preach one facade and you, so they have a gay forum of priests on the internet, where they can organize other meetings. There is actually some videos that have been made that are already starting to circulate about some orgies made by priests in churches in the south of Italy last month. But in my book, I also talk about this witness that, as you have read, basically has brought these documents after they have reported them to the police and they have deposited them with a notary, so for safety reasons, where there is orgies conducted by priests in the Vatican.
Absolutely. I mean, I want to make it clear to the audience, we're not against homosexuality. What we're against is taking a vow of chastity and lying about who you are and hurting children. That is what we're against.
I mean, crazy stuff. Like, for example, in my book, I show how in front of the Termini station in Rome, there is a pub where also goes on all this trafficking with a lot of gay prostitutes that go into inside the Vatican, cocaine. There is even these fake ambulances that pick up Romanian kids and bring them directly into the Vatican.
Yes.
And this is, I mean, reported by the police and everything. So, I mean, we're not talking here about speculations.
Uh-huh.
I want to address the people who are listening to us because it's very important they understand that this is not any speculation. It's evident also that Pope Ratzinger was protecting for too long the gay lobby. Understand?
Mm-hmm.
He shut this eye for too long, and at that point he became blackmailable.
And in fact, there's drugs too, and three times cocaine was intercepted that was meant for the Vatican.
Absolutely, and I write about that because it's crazy that these things
it's very
happen.
Important and connected to the CIA.
I mean, it's all. I mean, unbelievable if you don't have the witnesses and all the evidence that we have gathered, thanks to the Italian police, thanks to a lot of willing Freemasons and knights and what so on, that are willing to give us information, that are willing to also risk sometimes their job, their lives to bring out such information. I mean, there was a priest that, for example, I talk about. That at one point comes up with some serious accusations, and then basically it's called Don Patrizio Foggi, and now he's been disappearing forever into the Italian prison system. Nobody has ever heard about it since then.
Several people have disappeared or been suicided somehow.
Suicided. He gave some shocking revelations, stating that there was also an ex-policeman involved in this child trafficking ring, with various priests, including ones that were, and also Monsignor Camaldo himself, who worked for the CIA, in selling holy wafers to satanic sects. I mean, this is pretty...
that's really crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I like people to read my book to understand these things and then judge for themselves. So you can go, like you have probably done yourself, and verify from other sources what I'm writing about. And you will see that it's all correct.
Yeah, Jimmy Savile, the famous pedophile, was connected to Ratzinger as well, right?
No, he was connected to John Paul II, more than to Ratzinger, because he received a knighthood. When he received the knighthood from John Paul II, this was a reason more why he could then go to a little kid's hospital and do his ugly deeds.
Yes, exactly.
So this is scandalous, but this is what was happening. He went to Catholic hospitals and could then abuse a lot of people. And we know, I mean, Jimmy Savile is a guy who even made rings with the eyes of the people. He was making love with necrophilia, with dead bodies, and then picking up their eyes and making rings out of it. I mean, we're talking here about
one sick person.
One sick person, and he was made a knight by Saint John Paul II. Now, what kind of saint make a knight a guy like this? I mean, so people say...
Hanging out with the Queen's family often, too. You know?
Absolutely. But the thing that really shouldn't now... I mean, of course, England and Great Britain has the largest pedophilia network out of the Vatican, probably. I mean... And this is since ancient times, but I think that now it's really getting bad, because recently in England, even a guy who was, I think, responsible for the pedophilia, fighting pedophilia, he himself was then accused of pedophilia. So, I mean, we are reaching levels in which also this investigation with Jimmy Savile has brought in discussion all the structure of the BBC and right up to the Queen and Scotland Yard. I mean, they're all involved in it, and it's a massive scandal that proves once again that what certain things that were said for years by people like me, and even earlier by people like David Hicke, were not fantasy but reality. And I think that now people, when they see the facts in the newspaper, then they realize that, because sometimes they still tend to discredit information that comes from the internet. And that's why I try to, instead, with these books, arrive to a new level in which I really can give the right perspective and show also the seriousness of the subject, because we are really fed up of these so-called divulgators on the internet, these conspiracy theories, these that really are only bashing somebody without really explaining why, who, when, documents at hand, and what they have done to deserve this bashing. I bash anybody, but I have to know who they are.
Right.
It's important that we change our modality, and I hope that with my five books we will reach a new level in the so-called truth movement in the U.S.
I think it's great that the people in the U.S. will be able to read your books now. It really will explain a lot of things to them, and I think that a lot of people don't realize that, you were talking about the Borgias before, the vow of chastity has only been for the last 1,000 years, right?
Yes, absolutely.
It has had to, and what all this pedophilia and homosexuality is telling me is they shouldn't have this vow of chastity. It's not natural, you know?
Yes, you see, the vow of chastity should be maybe requested for those who want to have a specific office of integrity beyond even the sexual act.
That makes
Okay?
sense. That makes a lot of sense.
And this, of course, is acceptable, but you can't go against nature and impose something that, as we've seen in the US, has created an enormous amount of problems. And economically speaking, the Catholic Church in the US is bankrupt if they have to pay for what they have done to the many kids around the US.
It certainly amplified the level of devious behavior that has happened over the last 1,000 years.
Well, especially, I must say, especially since there has been this often closing an eye kind of attitude by the powerful people, you know.
No Illuminati pun intended.
No, I mean, of course, the Illuminati born into a context which was the Jesuit context. I mean, Adam Weishaupt was a Jesuit student. The university where he was teaching, Ingolstadt, was a prevalently Jesuit endeavor. He himself has a direct link with the Jesuits, while officially, for the rest of his order, he was preaching against the Jesuits in his degrees, because then in secret he himself was linked to this establishment that had helped him become the professor of canon law in Ingolstadt. So the Illuminati are, of course, those reigning families, those people who have always accepted that the Vatican holds the ultimate key of power, because they are the ones who have inherited the great power of the Roman Empire. And then, having inherited this power, they have also established this religion in Rome, which is called Christianity, which might not be really what Christianity really is, because there is far too many things that are missing from the original format, and probably manipulated, because Constantine and then the Roman Empire had to establish this as the religion of the empire, including tolerating a lot of pagan cults that can be at times even satanic.
Yes.
This toleration is going on since ancient times. It's not a question of Illuminati or non-Illuminati. Then, of course, we call Illuminati those mystery schools of old, which includes also these sects, and some of them are there a long time before the Ordo Templi Orientis was even invented. But then, when you create, like Crowley did, something like the Ordo Templi Orientis, you start creating a mass for this system you call the Ecclesia Gnostica Cattolica, which is, of course, it's very similar in the concept to the Catholic religion, but with your own twist, and then corrupting with these new ideals of freedom and do what thou wilt should be the whole of the law, the whole Catholic clergy, in these so-called pink seminars, which gave birth to this problem in recent times in the US. In fact, I talk about the problems with Aleister Crowley and the Catholic Church, because, of course, the followers of Crowley will never admit this, but the influence that Crowley has had, especially in the periods like the 60s, no? And 70s, when there was a sort of revolution going on, of thought at every level of society, including in the people in the seminars. And this fact that Crowley was bisexual, and he had this dark rituals of homosexual love, also of homosexual rape. And because Crowley devised a scenario in his religion whereby you can also rape the subject, and of course the subject sacrifices his anus to then achieve a degree which is the 11th degree of the OTO, the Coronzon, club that then was formed in Chicago based on this 11th degree. And still nowadays we have somebody like Michael Berthiaud in it, which is this kind of bishop of of Crowley in Chicago, completely perverted. But this, I mean, of course.
I know you said that Crowley was basically a front man, that there was even a bigger Satanist who was a very high-level black magician behind the scenes that not many people know about. And I've lit some sage now just because we're talking about it. Do you want to tell the audience about that a little bit?
I will talk about it in my next book, because I will leave them to wait until Volume 1 is out, because in Confessions Volume 1 the subject of Crowleyanity is touched like never before, and I think this will for the first time really put in difficulty the Ordo Templi Orientis. Sure, they probably will try to create problems for me, but I'm ready for it, no problem. My shoulders are rather large. I can take on this bunch of Satanists, but I'm going at the core really of their establishment, because I'm publishing from Berkeley, from San Francisco in California, where they have established their first Grand Lodge, so that reunified all the lodges at that time. And how did these lodges come around? I mean, the OTO has been, as you know, one of the tools of the psychological operations of the military and intelligence agencies, you know, in their experiments, the so-called MK Ultra, you know, that went on from the 40s into the 70s with various names, some projects, and so on.
That's another thing I wanted to ask you, Leo. I know they perform a form of mind control sometimes when they do rituals to take control of someone.
Absolutely. I just published a book now in Italy, which is going to be published in the US in 2017, I think, which is volume 4, also known as The Invisible Master, where I describe how the OTO initiates people through their degrees not to open their chakras, but to pollute their chakras and their system, because chakra means wheel. So if you pollute the wheels of the system, and to actually make them easily enslaved by the demons, that the elementary spirits that they start evoking at a certain degree, because the OTO, in fact, the first degrees doesn't really practice any magic with elementary spirits. It starts after the third degree. Gradually, they get mentioned more and more, and they actually possess the candidate who goes through these degrees.
Yeah, I feel bad for these people, because if they're under mind control, they have no idea that these entities are being attached to them. It's kind of scary.
They are willing participants. Most of them know. Actually, most of them are wishing that these entities come inside them.
Really?
I found it pretty scary when I was initiated, because they really come inside you, and I really needed an exorcism after to cut to throw them out.
You mentioned that on our last interview.
But you see, the energy is transmitted through the initiation, also through the breathing. Breathing, the prana, the energy of the breath, is fundamental for this initiation, because something is communicated to your ear. There's always, most of the time, somebody blowing on you like some air from the mouth, like, you know, and transmitting that element of demonic spirits, that elementary spirits that travel through the air and then, of course, enter into the person and possess this person, and then it's easily manipulated by the sect.
Well, I have to believe that the children are not willing participants. And that's another thing I wanted to ask you about, was, have you ever witnessed, or do you know that they're using any type of mind control devices to control people, like an actual machine of sorts?
Sure, they have devised that already since the times of MK Ultra. I think it was sub-project, I don't remember, for sub-project 19. It was called Telecontrol in Texas or something like that, where they actually experimented controlling large segments of the Christian population and of course trying to administer to them these electric pulses through the bioelectric composition of your body that will then generate a contrast with maybe their everyday reality. So this has been going on for ages. Of course, then they have made large antennas pointed on specific areas and have done that with even much larger success probably later on. But this is well known that there was part even of the documents that surfaced in 1975 when there was the MK Ultra case.
Let's not forget the experimental drugs that they
Experimental
use.
drugs, of course, all forms of it, but in the end, they understood that the biggest manipulation on man can be only done through religion. That's why religion includes really the very best of manipulation. And the ultimate religion for manipulation wasn't so much the Christian one, but the Muslim one, because the Islamic religion, because it had some elements which actually could trigger somebody to become a perfect assassin.
Right.
And this is something that we are living nowadays with this end of time scenario in which they have triggered since the 70s the intelligence agencies and then these Masonic lodges, these Ur lodges, and the military industrial complex have created the fundamentalist Muslim. Is something that is being actually programmed in a laboratory by experiments.
Absolutely.
So it's they are fruit of experimentation, and of course, if you bombard somebody that is coming out of Al Qaeda experience and you bring him to Guantanamo, you make him listen for 7 days in a row, what is bury the purple dinosaur, and then you put on him a deaf metal truck with strobos, and you make him go totally insane. He then comes out after 2 years, and he of course goes back and Rose and ISIS. So, I mean, and we have then somebody who was probably already an assassin with Al Qaeda, and then when he goes into ISIS and after being tortured, he's even more angry. And so that's why, unfortunately, this development between, and the franchise of Al Qaeda is now, of course, out, and the new one of ISIS is taking over because the ISIS franchise, on the contrary of Al Qaeda, works even on the internet. You can only follow on Twitter ISIS and become a member of ISIS. That's how easy it is for some people.
Yes, and MK Ultra is not some made-up fantasy thing. There was congressional hearings in the United States about this. This is a fact. These
Yes,
experiments
but
have happened for years and years and years.
sure, but they of course had to. You see, these documents were supposed to be destroyed in 1973 completely. They were supposed to be the, and instead they didn't. And when they surfaced, it was a big thing. But for how long it was a big thing?
Well,
I mean,
actually, many of the documents were destroyed. Only some of the documents surfaced.
no. I'm saying some surfaced and it created this big thing. So then. But it didn't really last so long because they were still able to carry on in the years following the same kind of experiments, maybe in a more discreet way. And it was very difficult to also link these experiments to the CIA because they learned to create sub-projects that were not directly linked to the agency. This kind of way of operating in the course of time as creating sub-projects of sub-projects with people who don't really know they're working for the agency doing certain things. So I mean, it's now we are in the year 2015 where there is a whole system of sub-projects that completely then avoids the main problem which came out when these things were made public, because the responsibility then goes on the US state. While instead, if you sub-project to 180 different institutions, and some of them are just private, and private researchers operate for money and don't really ask so many questions, then you can really do whatever. You understand?
Yes. What a lot of people don't understand is some of the rituals that are talked about in the Bible and some of the rituals that are at church on Mass on Sunday, you know, they have roots in pagan history. And I was watching a documentary, even the symbolism of the Holy Grail goes back to ancient Tara, you know, the chalice, if you will. It's quite fascinating how all roads are connected back to pagan roots. And that's another reason why I like you, Lear, because I'm half Italian and about a quarter Scottish, so I think that's why I understand you and resonate with you. Because it all seems to go back to that, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, the pagan roots are always present. And as I said, they were only camouflaged when the Christian religion was made the religion of the empire. Because they couldn't destroy whole priesthoods of Isis, of Mithras, of this or that other cult. When they had so many followers in such high position of the Roman society, the only thing they could do was just to take them on board and give them their own space.
Right,
of
right.
course, camouflaged in the right way. But I mean, the cult of Mithras, for example, was the temple is basically where the St. Peter resides, the actual basilica. That's on top of what used to be the main Mithraic temple. And at the same time, you have other temples like the temples of Isis that then in turn became temples, churches of the Black Mary, and so on. So I mean,
and the symbolism is literally everywhere if you're smart enough to connect the dots.
Of course, you have to connect the dots, and you have to have a mediumly high kind of culture level to really appreciate it all the way. And you have to understand that in old times, hardly anybody knew how to write and this and that. So, I mean, priests have had for a long time really culture in their hands together with the aristocracy as a complete exclusivity. And things started to change from 1776 with the establishment of the United States of America, where things kind of went a little bit more, at least on the surface, appeared as more democratic. Of course, it's all an illusion, we know that, but of course, it's a nice illusion, better than other ones.
Yes. Before we go to break, I want to mention something that's just a little off topic. It's not, you know, it's not in your book or anything, but I was watching have you seen the Viking series online, Leo? I'm not a big TV person, but I did watch the series online, and there was a priest that was a monk that was captured by the Vikings, and then he was later captured by the Catholic Church, and the Catholic Church who captured him found out that he was a really good scribe, and there was innuendo in the show that the bishop ended up trusting this guy he captured, the priest, and he showed him specific documents and teachings that were not what basically they were pagan teachings, and he made him swear that he would not tell anyone what these books had in them, but he wanted him to transpose all of them for him because he was a scribe. And I thought that was quite interesting, kind of reminiscent of the Vatican Library, you know?
No, but I mean, it's for example, not far from where I live in Italy, there is a place called Villa d'Este, which was one of the villas of the powerful d'Este family, who was, of course, had the cardinals, popes, and so on. And Cardinal d'Este constructed this huge villa with all the symbols of the hermetic and magical traditions and all these fountains and this great scenario where you can make, of course, some incredible Illuminati rituals. And that was, in fact, perceived also by Kenneth Anger, who, as you know, made The Lucifer Rising, who made one of his first films. I think, now I don't remember the title, if it was Joe d'Artifice or... was, but it is one of the early Kenneth Anger movies. Kenneth Anger is, as I want to remind our listeners, a member of the Ordo Templi Orientis and the guy who probably inspired more than anybody else Sympathy for the Devil, the song of the Rolling Stones, among other things.
Yeah.
Kenneth Anger basically did this movie there because he knew of the occult roots of this cardinal and what he was doing quite visibly in front of the world, but nobody really understand Hermetic culture, that you know, when you see the thing that is representing Jupiter, the other one is representing the goddess Diana, the other one is Neptune. I mean, it's quite clear if you have knowledge of all that. Said if you don't, and he was quite good at camouflaging the whole thing. And in any case, I mean, he did it quite blatantly in front of humanity, and still is one of the most visited places when people come to Rome as tourists. Villa d'Este is a thousand fountains that you have there, you know. But I mean, we have the fact that the popes were always fascinated with the occult since ancient times. Some of them even wrote magical grimoires. Some of them created talismans. It was like working with entities for the Vatican was always perceived as something of occult knowledge that they had a sort of exclusivity on. So they condemn the outside world to not do any black magic, but in the meantime, they had the exclusivity to do what they wanted.
Well, didn't the new pope actually change the coat of arms to include a pentagram?
Now, this is something I show in my book, and you have noticed, I see. The first Pope Francis came out, his representative, which is Father Lombardi, who is, of course, also a Jesuit, who is responsible for many years now, since the time, I think, of John Paul II already, for the communication, the TV and media in the Vatican. Well, Father Lombardi made this official presentation of the symbol, you know, the seal of this pope, because every pope needs a seal. Now, he presented this seal, and it originally was with a five-pointed star.
Yes.
This is incredible. It never happened in the history of papacy. But after a few days, this five-pointed star, which was, of course, reputed probably too visibly Masonic, and of course reminiscence of Freemasonry and of a detail that I also show in my book with the Masonic buckle worn by the nurse photographed with Queen Elizabeth, for example, during their exit from the hospital on March 4th, 2013. She was wearing a buckle, this nurse, with a Masonic symbol and the pentagram. So this pentagram of the Pope was transformed in something else, and this something else instead is the star with a few, which is not the five-pointed star, and which is instead the symbol of Ishtar. Of it's a different symbol, and it has not five, but a total of eight-pointed star. And it's interesting to see how they have changed this thing in a rush, because of course people were wondering what
people found it out rather quickly, quicker than they anticipated, I assume.
Probably in the age of internet, things get you know, to have such a fast spread that even the Pope and the Vatican with their old modalities need to catch up, you know. But they were pretty pretty fast in changing and camouflaging the whole thing. I mean, nobody has ever blinked an eye about it. No media has ever reported it. I mean, it's...
But it's in your book.
It is in my book, and I show in my book the two seals. First, how it was with the five-pointed, and the other one after, with a star, which... Interesting enough, as I said, is connected to, instead, the goddess Ishtar. I show also Janet Jackson wearing the same star.
Yes.
When...
her clothing mishap.
Yes, during the famous episode that shocked the Super Bowl audience in 2004, yes. And she was wearing what is now the star that is used by Bergoglio as his symbol. Why? Because this star, as I said, Easter, and Easter is also a deity very dear to Aleister Crowley. It's not like they went from the five-pointed star to something completely innocent. Don't be fooled. There is always an occult twist to it.
Yes, yeah, symbols. I'm sorry, go ahead, Leo.
No. They just wanted to not make it so blatant that it was Masonic. Because, of course, if you put the flaming star of Freemasonry as your symbol, which is like the flaming star is a symbol that in Freemasonry, especially in the Jacobite tradition of Freemasonry, so the Scottish Rite and the people who practiced ancient and accepted Scottish Rite, also the first three degrees in this tradition, there is a specific moment in which you are presented the mystery of the flaming star, the five-pointed star connected to Sirius. It's a very important moment.
Yes.
Revealed to the canon in the second degree of Freemasonry. So, and then also in pagan time was prominent for Pythagoreans. So, I mean, all this, though, it's explained in detail in my book, together also with the mystery of the ring of the fisherman held by the Pope, with the mysteries concerning the black shoes versus the red shoes. Which is like the what you were talking earlier with the more moderate approach of Pope Francis and the less moderate approach with the red shoes, which was typical of Benedict XVI, who went around with a fur coat. I mean, the guy was completely camp.
Right.
Totally out of it. I mean, as I said, he lives like Liberace, surrounded by these poodles playing his piano. I mean, come on, guys. I mean, this guy is a gay icon in the Vatican, a living gay icon, Cardinal, and then Pope Ratzinger. Yes, definitely.
Absolutely.
I had the conclusion at the end of it all. He's a gay icon.
Yeah. Well, that's just it. You know, there's so much gold and jewels in the Vatican. If they truly wanted to serve the people, they would sell some of that and take care of the people. And what you were talking about earlier, Leo, is, you know, symbols really do control the world and us. And another aspect of it is they are so ingrained in our psyche. And these people know this, and they use it in a subliminal matter as well.
Yes. I mean... The symbols are fundamental for power. Each seal contains the power of what is emanating. I mean, it's all there in this seal. So imagine, you know, what it means also to suddenly change a symbol in something that you have presented to the world. I mean, I point out on something that journalists simply ignore, because as I say, many other things also that should be pointed out by the media. The media is completely corrupt these days, especially in the English-speaking countries. You know basically nothing of most of the subjects which I have discussed in this book. And maybe the subjects, yes, but most of the character is involved, because you don't get this kind of information served to you.
That's why it's so important.
That's why a lot of people have considered my book very important, for the fact that I have really managed to put in this book all the information about, for example, also the inaccurate election of Pope Francis, which basically also is quite shocking, because it reveals a violation of an Article 76 of the actual Universi Dominici Gregis, which is the apostolic constitution of the Catholic Church. So if you violate that, and then, of course, you have a pope which is apparently only a pope in the appearance, but then it's just a cardinal who is acting as a pope, because the election is not... valid. This has been written by this study has been conducted by a guy called Socci in Italy, has proven this. So I mean, there is a lot of strange things surrounding this pope that people need to know to make their mind clear about the situation, unprecedented situation we are in, especially this Muslim invasion of the Vatican.
Absolutely.
I mean, Magdi Alam, the Catholic repent, this character who first got Ratzinger to actually baptize him and to actually become a Catholic in the Vatican in front of the Pope. And then suddenly, 5 years after he received this high profile baptism, he decides that he wants to leave the Catholic Church. And why? Because he considers the situation in decline because of the weak against Muslim, the weak against Islam. And he starts to criticize this papal idolatry around and euphoria around Pope Francis because he says that there is a real threat to free Christian Europe. And he discusses also the presence of this Jesuit Father Thomas Michel in a website of Islamic fundamentalists answering the questions that Islamic fundamentalists were making to him as a special guest.
Unreal.
Unreal. I mean, this is completely unreal, but fortunately we have
Yes,
evidence.
absolutely. It's real.
It's real. So, and then we have the episode which shocked the world, which was, of course, Pope Benedict XVI's September 12th speech in Regensburg that caused this unwanted firestorm in the Islamic world back then. But we are far from that now. Now we are completely in the other direction. Now we have Pope Francis letting a Muslim imam pray in the Vatican, cursing the believers, the unbelievers, sorry, the non-believers, which non-believers in Islam. So,
Absolutely.
this is quite shocking that there was permitted to an imam to actually curse the infidels, the non-Muslims inside the Vatican. I mean, it's unheard of, this kind of thing. So, we are going towards, some say, what is being deemed as Chrislam, you know? Islam is present definitely at the top of the Vatican hierarchy, and I also talk about my personal involvement with Thomas Michel, who used to be the Secretary for Interreligious Affairs of the Jesuits. I also talk about his involvement with Fethullah Gulen. Who is Fethullah Gulen, this dangerous Muslim leader who actually resides in the US? And is actually officially, he's condemned by Turkey as a terrorist now, but he's protected by the US. It is pretty. Fethullah Gulen, who is born in 1941 and is considered a great philosopher and author, now is actually, since last year, he has this court warrant issued by a Turkish court. So he should be arrested because this, legally, Interpol has issued the warrant replying to the request of the Turkish court. But of course, he's protected by the CIA. And how we can prove that? Well, we can prove that by the testimony given to by Nuri Gündes, who was a former top Turkish intelligence official. We have also what Jeff Stein wrote in the Washington Post, saying that this Islamic group is a CIA front. So there is a whole memoir by a former Turkish intelligence official that claims that this movement has been used by the CIA. And now that, of course, is clashing with Erdogan, who is himself in the Ator Pentalfa, they are simply clashing on the modalities because sometimes in the New World Order there is some internal clashes.
Yes.
Fethullah Gulen is a very good friend with Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton. Now, he gets his Turkish members to fund Hillary's campaign. He basically, Bill Clinton has thanked very much Fethullah Gulen officially. This is on record. So we would like to ask the American people, how comes that the Clintons thanked somebody who is, at all effects these days, a terrorist? And how comes he is residing in Pennsylvania with his bodyguards, without anybody saying anything, in Pennsylvania, in Sylvesburg?
Yeah, I think the Bushes and Clintons sold their souls long ago. It's quite sad.
But I mean, you obtain a resident permit, this Fethullah Gulen, thanks to these guys who basically are the agency's outreach to universities. And as I say agency, of course, I'm talking about the CIA. And basically, Fethullah Gulen was also received in the Vatican by Pope John Paul II. So, I mean, he's a full supporter of the New World Order, full on. He actually has written a book where he preaches the New World Order, and is actually presented by Thomas Michel, the Jesuit, who has a foreword by him. I mean, this is incredible, you know, what is coming out of this situation, because then a representative of the Gulen movement told me that this... representative of the Vatican said to him before then suddenly dying, which was the fact that there were 40 cardinals in the Vatican who had converted the secretly to Islam. So
yeah, what people don't understand is, and they need to understand, is there's secret wars going on inside Freemasonry and inside the Vatican, that there's good and bad sides that are jockeying for power right now.
Absolutely. I mean, for example, Fethullah Gulen used to be the best friend with Erdogan, the Turkish prime minister. Then I don't know if he's now president, prime minister. I think the Turkish now is more or less a dictatorship under Erdogan. It's quite clear where he's going. He has actually started to censor Gulen's newspapers, and he started to argue with Gulen. Why? Because at one point Gulen was against the fact that he was involved with the Zionists, and at the same time he also discovered that they were constructing ISIS as a much more fundamentalist approach to Islam that Fethullah Gulen himself tries to moderate, you understand, because he is the one who preaches moderate Islam, okay? Mm-hmm. So once he discovered, Gulen discovered Erdogan was in the Ator Pent Alpha Lodge, vice versa, Erdogan suddenly discovered that Gulen had infiltrated the whole Turkish government with the Jesuits, with the Jesuit backing from Rome. He had infiltrated all the military in Turkey. He had infiltrated everybody. But then suddenly this writer came out with a book denouncing all this. And then it was suddenly a big problem for Fethullah Gulen, because he had been exposed in Turkey. And that's why probably he never really went to live there, since a long time ago. He escaped and went to the U.S. because he knew that probably this could come out sooner or later, the truth about his overthrowing the Turkish government. So now Recep Tayyip Erdogan is actually turned officially out to be his enemy, but it's not like Erdogan is any better than Gulen. They are part of the same thing, because they're both for the caliphate, and Erdogan is supporting ISIS. I mean, the secret service, the Turkish secret service is secretly supporting ISIS. The Turks are not entering in war with ISIS. Notice this. They have Absolutely. Not taken any stand against ISIS, because they are friends with ISIS. They collaborate with ISIS. ISIS, of course, being created also by the Zionists, is hand in hand with Turks. They are a very powerful nation, and they are the ones who, together with when they were Ottoman Empire, hold the office of the caliphate, in the Sunni tradition. The Ottoman Sultan was really the caliph of all the tradition. Now, once 100 years ago, the Ottoman Empire was made to fall by the British.
We lost some of your audio there for a moment when you're talking about Turkey.
Yes, as I said, Turkey up until 100 years ago was the Ottoman Empire. They are proponents of the caliphate because they are of the Sunni tradition, and the Sunni tradition wants a caliphate. So they are, of course, they go hand in hand with ISIS. ISIS at the moment has only enemies, has probably the Shiites, but the Shiites are not really endorsing so much recently, so much against ISIS. They're not really doing that much. They mind their own business because the Shiites are based mostly in Iran. Iran tries to stay, if possible, apart from sometimes when they bomb, for retaliation, they try to stay out of this war. Of course, with the Yemen is different because there you have a Shiite majority. But the thing is that in general, Shiites and Sunni are both manipulated on top by the same people. And they are all part of what is the Muslim Illuminati establishment.
Leo, would you mind explaining the Göbekli Tepe, however you say it, a connection?
Yeah, the Göbekli Tepe is this, as you know, this archaeological discovery of great importance that has been found, and that is in Turkey, and demonstrates that the seat of power of ancient times, which is basically very old. Very old. I mean, we are talking here about very old. Was actually the seat where the, let's say, the ancestors of the modern Illuminati were meeting. You understand?
Yes.
And I think that in my book I show also a very interesting analogy between Göbekli Tepe as this archaeological place, and also I show the analogy with this. Recently constructed Vatican II setup, which they're trying to do outside of Rome. At least they were trying to do outside of Rome up until not so long ago, which is basically miming the Göbekli Tepe to construct a possible Vatican II in case suddenly maybe the Vatican gets destroyed, because there is a possibility that the Vatican will get destroyed by a terrorist attack, you know, maybe a bomb or something. Mm-hmm. Then they will have to move the whole show. So in a way, some Vatican groups have been planning some alternative setups. And among these alternative setups, there's been also this one particularly interesting for us, which I described in my book, which is the setup of Palestrina. And the setup of Palestrina was created by some people who were very close to John Paul II, and in particular Dr. Antonio Leonardo Montuoro and Prefetto Marinelli, who was called by John Paul II, the Polish Pope, the general, his general. He called him to his bedside when he was about to die. He had a very important, you know, influence, this guy in the Vatican, and so he decided to start constructing this particular place based, and you can see that it's actually based on the monumental megalithic sanctuary of Göbekli, of how you say it in English, because of the pronunciation, Göbekli Tepe, yeah, because it's a little bit tricky when you
yeah.
I mean, for those who don't know what it is, it has been discovered in 1995, by a German archaeologist called Professor Klaus Schmidt, who died, by the way, last year, and is located approximately 6 kilometers northeast of the town of Salurfa in Turkey, near the border with Syria. And that's why it's particular this place also, because it's right on the border where now ISIS has raised this flag.
Yeah, I have to believe that's got a lot to do with the drama that's going on over there.
Oh, well, there is some very interesting things that definitely are going on behind the scenes. The official dating, as we know, goes back at least 12,000 years for this place, and it completely changes the perspective of what now we count as the official version of history. You understand?
Absolutely.
And the tradition of the groups who initiated themselves and did these ancient meetings in this place in Urfa in Turkey, where they have the site has emerged, were basically ancient mystery schools, academies that came from the times even before that of Atlantis and his inhabitants, the Perigians. So they have been said to participate to the meetings at Göbekli Tepe. Imagine the people from Atlantis were participating to these meetings in this place. So it has an
incredible
It's an incredible place. And Giacomo Rumor, who was basically this cousin of this prime minister, Italian prime minister called Mariano Rumor, he informed a friend of mine called Diego Marin, who is a Venetian researcher, quite a young guy, but who does a lot of research, first-hand research, and he basically, his definitely what they came up with leaves very little room for the conformist historical view and interpretation of the whole thing. But the interesting thing also is that this Giacomo Rumor found also a link. A correspondence was found between this Giacomo Rumor and members of what is supposed to be a secret esoteric brotherhood that basically will designs this transnational structure that then gave birth to the UN and the EU and whatever, and it's has stresses to has ties with families like the Sinclair and with all the old Seeing Eye Illuminati families. So basically there is a strong link of this place with the origins of the Illuminati, and that's why I show in my book they want to reproduce the same place in a modern variant, maybe here near Rome. In Palestrina.
Yes. Well, I don't think it's a secret that the Vatican is on a very powerful ley line, is it not? And they know that, so they can harness that energy.
Well, but as I said, there in this moment of time, the Vatican is also very scared of a possible destruction or of some very sudden terrorist attacks that will come into place once the Jubileum starts this autumn. The Pope Francis has started this jubileum, this unexpected jubileum, which basically will bring millions and millions of visitors to the Holy City, because Rome is considered the second Holy City after Jerusalem. And we have great security problems for this.
Things could get very interesting, that's for sure.
Things will get very interesting, and if actually they have to reproduce some of the prophecies that have been made, probably Rome will be at least partly destroyed.
Yeah, there's a 700-year-old prophecy that someone cursed.
There is many prophecies, not only that. You know that in a section of my book, I dedicated a whole section to the various prophecies,
yes.
Comparing them also with the most recent events. And I think that I've done a pretty reasonable job staying quite objective in showing that there is a lot of reasons to believe that some of the prophecies are actually coming into fruition. And I think that I've done that in a pretty reasonable way. I want to also thank some of the insiders that gave me the information for this book. One on top of all is Luciano Fortunato Chandra, who is a Knight of the Order of the Holy Sepulchre. I show actually in the book his diploma of appointed Knight of the Pope. No, I don't know if you see it in the book, page 105.
Uh-huh.
If you're curious, you can see this document to show the seriousness of the information that was given to me and who gave it to me. Because here, we are really showing inside information, and so people will say, but who gave you this information? There is the documents to demonstrate the photos and the documents, me with these people, and also the documents to demonstrate who are these people and the importance of these people. Luciano Fortunato Chandra was actually appointed as to inherit the Grand Mastership of the Knights Templar by Rocco Zingaro of San Ferdinando, who had himself one of the various holy grails that are in existence. And maybe we should one day dedicate also some space to the subject of the holy grail. But it will
that'd be great.
It will probably take a whole episode.
Yeah.
But as I said, Rocco Zingaro di San Ferdinando was a grand preceptor of a specific Neo-Templar order called SMTHO. These are the initials. Some of the other ones more known is the SMTJ, and in the Neo-Templar world they use this kind of acronyms. And he was the week before they actually killed him, he phoned up Fortunato Luciano Sciandra saying, I'm gonna end up like Jacob de Molay, because they wanted to take from him not so much the Holy Grail, but the fact that he owns also the ashes of Jacob de Molay, the last of the Knights Templars. So these ashes were then taken by Antonio Leonardo Montuoro and brought into this new location in Palestrina, near where they're actually constructing this Temple of the Holy Spirit. In their headquarters, they have this, of course it's hidden, these relics, which is the Holy Grail and also the ashes. But it's not the only Holy Grail. Eh? There is other Holy Grails. There is another one which I think is probably more serious, has probably could be even more the Holy Grail than this one. I mean, but still, each of these Holy Grails is not just something that has appeared on the scene and has not been taken notice by the Catholic Church. They always try to take control of all the Holy Grails that appear to the scenes. Either they are real or not real, it doesn't matter. If they have some kind of importance, they need to be controlled and taken by the Jesuits. That's how it works.
Right.
And one of the other Holy Grails, most important Holy Grails in existence, is the one that belonged to Padre Pio, and that one is in the hands at the moment of a relative of the doctor of Padre Pio, who was Giorgio Festa. And basically this niece, I think, of this guy is holding this Holy Grail, which I had the possibility of seeing. But it is interesting because it could be also another not real Holy Grail, but it has a letter that accompanies it that actually written by Padre Pio, which is, as you know, one of the most important saints in the Catholic world, with his stigmata. And you were asking me, or asking actually Christy earlier on before the show started, about what kind of relics I brought to the US, and the relics that I brought to the US were the bandages, pieces of the bandages of Padre Pio with his stigmata.
Amazing.
And of course these bandages, but they were like, I had also with a letter of that to verify that they were real, I was carrying with me at all time always a letter, also by the head of the Franciscan monks, who is the head of the order, and with the seal of the Vatican, that proves that this is a real, belongs to Padre Pio, who was also, as we all know, a great exorcist. And so I at time use these relics to help people, so if possible.
Thank you for talking about that, Leo. I think it's very fascinating. What was the purpose to bring them here?
It was because of their energy, and because when I move and I work for the Holy Spirit in the real sense of the term, I need to have also my objects to protect myself. And we did a very incredible work, me and Christy, in the U.S. by also finalizing this contract in the end with CCC Publishing. As you know, for many years we tried to translate my works and have them published in English, but this has not really came into fruition until we came into California. And thanks to now the courageous work of CCC Publishing, we are able to bring you these books. But it is been a work of many years in the making to arrive to this level, because there is very few people that have really the courage to publish this kind of books and to make them accessible for the English-speaking market. Plus, really, It's sad to see that nobody really believed in wanting to invest time and money on a project like this one, because nowadays the books need to cost the less possible and make the maximum profit, like everything else in society.
Yeah, and I also know it was very important for you to be there, involved in transposing the books, because you wanted to maintain the integrity of your original writing. So it's really great that you finally found someone that could help you with that.
Absolutely, we are trying. You see, Cristina, she's my wife, doing a great editing job and adaptation of my translation. I think that actually, by being in charge of the translation myself, I have more the possibility of controlling the whole process and making sure that it is my wording. At the same time, though, as you have noticed from the writing, you don't really think of this book as a translation of an Italian book. You
Right.
see it has to come through as a real American book. And people, I think, have noticed this because
Yeah,
they
that's
are.
why it wasn't easy for you to do it. You had to do it in a certain way that, what you were saying wasn't compromised because.
Absolutely, that's why I need to control every single word. And as I said, I'm participating myself now in the translation efforts. And together, thanks with my wife, who, as you know, is doing a great job also in adapting and wording it even better. At times, I've been working for hours on end to make sure that this translation really is not a translation, but it is like it was rewritten completely. In fact, this book, like The Last Pope, is a completely different book from what I was doing in Italy when I published a little version similar in the title, but quite different in the content because it was only 100 pages. And then also with the confessions, I have added so much new material for the English editions.
I noticed that with the dates.
And with all the material, I upgrade all the books to make them really an exclusivity for the English-speaking market, because I think that it's really about time they get the full picture.
Well, you mentioned the Franciscan Order earlier, and I'd also heard you in a show say the Franciscan Order is one of the more spiritual-oriented orders that was more true to Christianity. And that would make my family very happy, Leo, because my aunt is a Franciscan nun. She has been her whole life, and I know that she has lived her life, in true spiritual form.
There's been some problems recently, unfortunately, with the Franciscan Order, you see. Some of the more traditionalists were attacked very heavily, and also, unfortunately, their money was not invested correctly by those who were supposed to invest the money, and actually was even invested in weapons. Now, these
Wow.
scandals surfaced recently, and so the Franciscan Order in Italy, of course, has some problems in explaining all this.
Welcome back. You're listening to Truth Connections with your host, Catherine Buckaloo.
All right, everybody, we are back with our very special guest, Leo Zagami, and I apologize for cutting the broadcast off short like that. I wasn't going to take a break like I normally do because I didn't want to interrupt Leo's flow, but the internet gods had more in store for us and wanted us to take a break anyway. So I think that we stopped at it cut out. Leo's audio cut out at the end of a sentence, so we should be okay. But I normally will give some shout-outs before we go to break, so I'm going to do that right now. If you noticed our new intro, I want to give some shout-outs to Fred Cusinato for letting us use his music. We decided to use this song because it was in 432 hertz, and we wanted to bring a better energy to our show. And the intro was actually edited by Stuart Cardell. He produced it and mixed it down for us. Also, I want to give a shout out to Tone Man, our new artist. He did a great job with the artwork for Leo's show, so we want to thank him for that. And I would like to also let the audience know that if you would like to see us do more programs like this, to please consider going to truthconnections.com and making a donation so we can upgrade our equipment. Okay, we are back with our very special guest again, Leo Zagami. And, you know, the flow was so great, Leo, I didn't want to interrupt you. You were going so well, I was going to not take a break this time. But that's okay. I wanted to, we were talking about prophecy before. I know there's the prophecy, a 900-year-old prophecy from an Irish saint. Would you mind telling them about that prophecy? Because I think it ties into your last pope theory, you know?
Yes, I have a little bit of problems listening to you on my side. So if you wouldn't mind, Catherine, to actually give me a second to see if I can position.
Sure, sure, no problem.
Now we can try again.
Is that better for you?
Yeah, now it's better. It seems great. That I can get you clearly because there was some interruption.
Did you hear the question before?
Unfortunately not, because okay. It's interrupting.
Okay. We were talking about prophecy before, and I read in your book about, I think it relates to what your book is about. There was an Irish saint had a prophecy that he predicted 900 years ago that this would be the last pope. Can you go into that a little bit?
Well, yes, allegedly this saint is connected to these prophecies, because we remember that there is a lot of people that think, also historians, that these Malachi prophecies might have been created later on, and they were not actually made by this saint, because this saint is very important for the Catholic Church and also very important for the Knights Templars, as Saint Malachy was a dear friend of Saint Bernard of Clairvaux, who was the guy who made the order for the Knights Templar, meaning their actual rules that they were living on. And so the fact that these Malachy prophecies, though, have been around for hundreds of years, regardless of whoever created them, with a certain accuracy, they seem to predict a certain number of popes that end with this last pope that they call Petrus Romanus in these prophecies, which means Peter the Roman. Of course, Pope Francis doesn't seem to be Peter the Roman, but another guy who actually was said to have these characteristics was instead Cardinal Tarcisio Bertone, because he was born in Romano Canavese, and a small town in the province of Turin, and he is actually the Pink Pope. They called in the Vatican the Pink Pope because he is this, some say, the head of the gay lobby. And basically, Tarcisio Bertone is living in this luxury penthouse, which has been criticized even by Pope Francis. And he is not anymore the Secretary of State, but some have seen him as possibly in the past claimant to the Petrine ministry, though he never became pope. He's one of the most, probably the most powerful person in the Vatican, because he's heading what we talked before about, which is the gay lobby. In any case, regarding the prophecies that were made by Malachy in his prophecy of this last pope, it was said that there is also a black pope by some people, but this black pope prophecy is not made by Malachy itself. Okay, so sometimes it's like there is some kind of confusion made, because there is instead in the tradition of Rome, just simply let's say a legend that's been carried on for hundreds of years, of a last pope being a black pope, and some say also that this might be connected to the fact that of course the Jesuit is head known usually as the black pope, the general of the Jesuits, but in any case the general of the Jesuits is not Pope Francis, because we have a general of the Jesuits and he's Adolf Nicholas. But some have connected also this element to the prophecies that the Malachi prophecies. It's definitely the interesting thing about what is happening now is that not only the Malachi prophecies seem to actually point on a certain number of popes, 112 in total.
That's an important number too. That's an important number.
Well, I mean, definitely, it is an important number, yes, Kabbalistically speaking, also, and because if you sum it, 2 and 2 it will give 4, which is the emperor, which is like in the Tarox. But in any case, the popes in Malachi list are 112, and they are underlined by some short phrases in Latin that describes basically from Pope Celestine II, elected in 1143, to a pope yet to reach now it's who.
I'm going to ask you to repeat that. You cut out when you said the Pope was elected, that part, when you were talking about it.
Well, yes, as I was saying, the last Pope will end with the destruction of Rome and the last judgment. So, according to this list, the last Pope should arrive after the one called the Gloria Olive, a pontiff who many by chronology thought was Pope Benedict XVI. Then there is this lost prophecy, like I mentioned just earlier on. It's more of a myth, of a legend, no? And this pope is described as Caput Nigrum, which means a dark-skinned pope. Now, it's possible that the next pope will actually be the Caput Nigrum of the prophecy. The moment in which Pope Francis stepped down, it's possible that we will have this Caput Nigrum to actually fulfill the prophecy, not fully. And the answer regarding the connection between the 111 prophecies attributed to Saint Malachi and this 112 is in a book called The Prophecy of the Last Pope, which was a highly influential novel written by a researcher called Schmeig Maria Olaf and published in 2001. The author spent almost a decade researching Rome, beginning in 1992, until the publication. He spent all the time researching the various facts, and he made a series of complex studies in search of the truth about this Malachi prophecy. So in my book, I explain this and the fact that he then included this whole context in his fictional novel. But as I said, there is definitely a tradition that sees the Black Pope as something foreign also. The first foreigner, we were talking there about foreigners, no? Being popes, and the first one was John Paul II. In modern times, we can say he's the first of the foreign popes. Then we had Cardinal Ratzinger, and people kind of get used to it, no? Right. But when John Paul II was actually elected in the square during the election, some people were shouting, "The Black Pope!" When they heard the name of a foreigner, like Cardinal Wojtyła, understand?
Mm-hmm.
Because is so much this prophecy embedded into the Roman culture and into the Roman tradition that when something foreign came out, they immediately shouted at the Black Pope.
Yeah. So very rooted in prophecy, I see.
Yeah, definitely. So then we have also a passage dedicated to the Black Pope by Nostradamus, which seems still a bit far-fetched and is difficult really to interpret clearly, which we find in chapter 6, where it states, "Through adverse Mars will the monarchy of the great fisher be in ruinous trouble. The young red black one will seize the hierarchy. The traitors will act on a day of a drizzle. So, as you see, it's not really the black pope in this Nostradamus prophecy. It's the young red black one will seize the hierarchy. Now, you always have to take these prophecies for their symbolic value, no?
Right.
And what they're trying to transmit. So, of course, the monarchy of the great fisherman refers to the Vatican, and having Mars adverse is not considered a good thing in astrology. So, in the physical world, we can say that accident, fevers, and violence will be... All this is bringing towards a date, a culmination date, in which there might be a possible attack on the Vatican, no? Which I talk about in this book. This date, which was also announced by and predicted by Ali Akça, who was the Turkish assassin who tried to kill John Paul II, is the date of May 13th, 2017. Why is that? Because it coincides with the first revelation of the Madonna, the Holy Mary of Fatima.
Interesting.
Which is, yes, a Catholic thing, but as you see it by the name, it carries on a Muslim name, Fatima, which was the daughter of Prophet Muhammad. So this date apparently kind of syncs, puts in synchronicity two different traditions to a like a turning moment in history that will prove the change. You understand?
Absolutely.
So it's interesting also what ISIS has announced recently about the fact that they will attack Rome and that there is basically... they warned that in 6 or 7 months the Antichrist will arrive.
Yes, it certainly seems that some of these fundamentalists are hell-bent on making what their prophecy is come true.
Absolutely, but as I said before, they are maybe trying also to accelerate all the... I mean, they think that by doing all this evil, they accelerate the coming of this and fruition of this prophecy. So they, in their sick minds, they're thinking of helping up the situation by doing what they're doing.
They're not really doing
unfortunately,
that.
The reality of it. But we can say that the Black Pope is something that everybody is expecting because the church is growing, especially in Africa, where Christians have actually surpassed, they are actually... managed to be now become more than Muslims. And so it's the only continent where this is happening, where Christians are trying to embrace Christianity in this way. Even though now with ISIS, with Boko Haram, and with everything that is happening, things are changing because whole parts of the population is being forced to become Muslim. Now, you can imagine how tactic this will be in the whole world scenario, you know, in this geopolitical game that often the Vatican represents. So popes are not just elected by chance or by something, the Holy Spirit. No, no, no. They are elected thanks to a very complicated geopolitical game that is being played, and they have to be part of it. So they're chosen to prove, to make some kind of moves, and so now we have, of course, South American Pope, which is very important in order also for the U.S. to re-embrace completely South America, like is happening also with Cuba, no? Mm-hmm. Cuba, the main facilitator between the U.S. and Cuba. You can just go and see it on the internet. You will find it from very serious sites, very credible sites. It was the Vatican. The Vatican was the one that made it possible for the U.S. now to re-pacificate itself with Cuba, because they have always been the link in between them, because Castro was educated by the Jesuits, because the whole scenario was crafted very carefully by the Jesuits in Cuba. So... The next Pope, being African and possibly of Nigerian origin, can in this moment become that Caput Nigrum, and at the same time can change the course of Christianity, and by the martyrdom that most Christians are now suffering in Africa, this gives actually adds extra power to this figure.
Certainly.
We can say that definitely, as I said, the Provost is of course the known as the Black Pope, but we can still have a last surprise out of the Vatican, somebody that will of course be not anymore a Pope as we know it today in the Vatican of today, but in the Vatican of tomorrow, which will be what is left of Rome, and possibly not even in Rome. So at that point, the last Pope stays Pope Francis, you know? And he is at the moment, a lot of people said, Pope Francis might give up and resign. Of course, one day he will resign. He's not going to wait until, because as I said before, destroying the divinity of the office means that one can actually decline and step down whenever he wants. So they have done that already with Pope Ratzinger, and by doing that they have opened the way for others to do this. But I think that at the moment Pope Francis doesn't have any intention to step down. He wants also to come to the U.S. And this will be probably very soon, no? I think after the summer. And so we will see the Pope Francis in the U.S. And in a way, in the U.S., I think that is with his presence that he will endorse the presidency, possible presidency of Jeb Bush.
It's kind of scary that the choices that we're facing here in the United States. I don't like any of them so far.
Well, the presidential campaign is a bit of a joke, let me tell you.
Sure, absolutely.
It's, and then you have now generational runners-up, like the Ron Pauls or whatever, no? Now it's Rand Paul. Before it was Ron Paul. I don't know. And tomorrow will be somebody else from the same family. Or maybe you have the eternal runners like Huckerby. Is this a democracy? It looks more like fiction. Completely.
I was raised, my father took me when I was 18 years old to vote in my first election. And I voted in every election besides the last one. It's like a dog and pony show. I mean, whoever puts the most money in is the one who wins. The people don't pick the president. It's so blatantly obvious to people who know and can see and follow the money. It's not a democracy at all. It really isn't. Yes, let's just start talking about the Holy See again. Leo, would you mind explaining to the audience what the Holy See is? We'll just start over again since you cut out.
Are you there?
Yes.
Okay, so the Holy See is basically, as I said, the Vatican is a state, so they have their own jurisdiction over their own matters and the matters of the Catholic Church in general, with the various episcopal sees, which are, of course, the central one is the one of the Bishop of Rome, the Pope, which is a sort of, is a monarch, no?
Yes.
Within the secret actual prayers in the Vatican, he's called the Pharaoh, you know. And he's really the central point of reference for the Church. So the structure is very hierarchical. You have, of course, like in every state, then you have the Secretary of State, which is the chief administrator. It's a sovereign state and has a centralized government, which is constituted by the various bishops, monsignores.
Its own police force.
Sorry?
It's its own bank, its own police force. It's like its own country.
The inhabitants of the Vatican are not that many. They're around 800. But then you have, yes, within the Vatican, also remember the external force of the Swiss guards, which are Swiss.
Yes.
By birth. And they are not counted as being residents of the Vatican. They are Swiss. So you have the security of the Swiss. Then you have on top of that, of course, the various extraterritorial premises in Rome, where the Vatican has their own jurisdiction, that, like it's their own state, you know. So
yes.
It's like, for example, the Knights of Malta have their own jurisdiction also, and their extraterritorial premises in Rome.
Well, the country of Switzerland has basically been set up for an Illuminati safe haven, you know, for banking and whatnot.
Sure, but also the interesting thing is that you have within the Vatican also a knighthood like the Knights of Malta, who has their own extraterritorial, their own territories and their own passport and their own thing, which is divided then by the Vatican, but it's still dependent by the Vatican because it's the Knights of the Vatican, Knights of Malta are part of the Vatican system. But they have also this extraterritorial seat themselves, which is independent from the Vatican. I mean, there is a whole way of working these international organizations that are representing the Holy See, which is not only the Vatican city-state, which is basically the expression of the power of the church and of the canon law of this church, which it's one of the last monarchies on earth and one of the most powerful ones.
For sure. No, I know I heard you mention that, many people believe that ETs have been meeting in secret with insiders of the Vatican for centuries. And I know I heard you mention on a show that the Vatican was meeting with ufologists. Well, why do you think that is? You think they're expecting, you know, this planet Nerubu to do something and it's going to bring beings here from another planet or something?
I will go much in depth with this specific subject in Volume 4, so I will not touch.
No. Okay, no problem. Explain for the audience what a Neo-Templar is.
Knights Templar?
A Neo-Templar.
Neo-Templar, yes, sure. Of course, the Knights Templar ended up with the death of Jacob de Molay, who was the last Grand Master. Since then, the whole myth of the Knights Templar, the structure was stolen in a way, and the ideals were transformed in something even more particular by the Jesuits. And then the Jesuits, after the foundation of the Jesuits, was imitating the Knights Templars. In the century following this foundation of the Jesuits, they wanted something that could involve the aristocracy again, using this great myth of the Knights Templars. They could actually activate this new Templar revival. Of course, there were then genuine Knights Templars families, like the one, my family, for example, or other family like the Sinclair in Scotland. But this specific document called the, L'Armenius Charter or L'Armenius Paper, it's a document which was forged by the Jesuits to claim there was some kind of grandmastership from the times of Jacob de Molay that had been perpetrated in secret to protect and that arrived all the way, you know, to their own appointed grandmaster, because the Jesuits were very clever and chose, of course, one of the key aristocrats of that time to relaunch the whole thing. They did it mainly from France, and Neo-Templarism was born partly what used to be known as the University of Clermont, which also gave birth to some of the degrees of Freemasonry of the ancient and accepted Scottish Rite. That's why the Neo-Templar myth and neo-temporal revival goes also through certain rites of Freemasonry, especially the ancient and accepted Scottish rite. Then you have, of course, also the York rite with their own Knights Templars and so on. But the neo-temporal revival, it's very connected to the Jesuits because it's sort of born out of their own idea of wanting to manipulate again the aristocracy with some kind of tale that will facilitate also their position as defenders of the faith, but not totally defenders of the Pope and of the Vatican. Why? Because the legend, of course, will always say that the Vatican, but the history books also said for a long time that the Vatican had condemned these Templars completely after Jacob de Molay. They were considered heretic. That's not true because apparently lately with another document that was brought to light in the last decade, it seems like the Knights Templars were forgiven by the Pope in last stance, even if, of course, they were persecuted and they were dismantled. But these new Templars have very little to do with the original Templars and much more to do with the Jesuits.
Yes. I also think it's very important to follow the money as you have in this book. Would you mind discussing for the audience what the 5% gang is?
The 5% gang. We're talking here about very complex structures of money that, of course, the 5% gang in particular is just a broader, sorry, because Christy is giving me some signals. I don't know what she was saying.
Okay.
Basically, these are ex-bank managers that are suspected of taking 5% payoffs on banking operations related to a bank called Monte dei Paschi di Siena. Now, the Monte dei Paschi di Siena is one of the oldest operating banks in the world. It was, it's like the bank of the city of Siena. You know, the city of Siena is one of the most beautiful cities in the world. And it has this bank. Siena is based in Tuscany, in the heart of Tuscany. And the Monte dei Paschi, being the most old bank, of course, is connected with the Vatican Bank. And it's also connected to the English royal family, though. Because, as we know, the city of London has a lot of links also with Tuscany, because there is a whole region now in Tuscany, the Chianti region, which is actually been rebaptized Chianti Shire, because it's full of English.
It's also connected to the death of a banker, right? God's banker.
Yes. Now, what I was saying is that the Monte Paschi di Siena has been connected with death of somebody who basically called David Rossi, who apparently was thrown out of the window, but they said that he actually was suicidal. And he was a close collaborator of the present Grand Master of the Freemasons in Italy, which is Stefano Bisi. And this whole story of the bank of the Monte dei Paschi is different, though, from the Calvi murder, which was, as you know, the historical murder of Calvi, this member of the P2, back in the early 80s. Now, this is a completely different story, but it is similar to a certain extent because they are covering a 90 million euro fraud, which is not really little money, understand, 90 million. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, they are covering even bigger fraud, which will never be released to the public because now the Italian state has decided to actually cover the whole thing with the secret of state veto on the information.
Yes, sure. You say this, in your book, what the P2 actually stands for. I thought that was kind of funny.
Like what, sorry?
I'm trying to find it in my notes.
In what sense, the P2?
The P2 Lodge, what it actually stood for. I can't find it in my notes. I don't know if you...
Well, the propaganda, do it.
Yes, yes, yes.
Sure, it stands for propaganda. What I was just closing on the Monte dei Paschi. Monte dei Paschi Bank was born in 1472, which is the year, as you know, of the discovery of no. So I mean, we're talking here about a bank which has a very long history. Now, the Vatican Bank is doing some very shady business. But the most shady thing they did was actually done by Ratzinger before he left the Vatican. He picked up all the gold and all the stuff and he sent it back to at least most of the gold that he had in his hands in the Vatican, which was a lot of it belonged also to Nazis and had Nazi symbols crafted on it. So it was a lot of Nazi gold.
I was going to ask you that next, the Nazi connection.
Well, there is a Nazi connection. In any case, this gold was sent before Ratzinger resigned. It was actually before he resigned from this office, he decided to basically take all the gold and brought it back to Germany. So, in a secret operation made without anybody knowing, in case these illegal accounts were discovered by the Italian police, they would have all got in trouble and the money would have probably been confiscated by Italian authorities, okay? So what the Pope did was to protect all his criminal friends and bring all their money away before he gave up his office as Pope. This is the actual, you know, like synthetically speaking, to understand better this whole thing. So when you say what is the 5% gang, it's basically a bunch of crooks. This is what they are.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, it's people between London, Rome, Siena, and Milan who have done a lot of dodgy deals because the money that often comes into the Vatican belongs to armed dealers, mafiosi, drug dealers, and whatnot. So it always needs to be recycled in all these different banks and
money laundering
operation, very complex with shady deals that are done left, right, and center.
Is the Vatican doing better financially, the bank, or are they still in the same or worse condition?
Okay, so the Vatican Bank now has a surface of being in better condition because it was, like I described in my book, taken immediately over by the Knights of Malta when the Ratzinger was actually about to resign. That was the last thing he did. Then the Knights of Malta were... The guy who was actually nominated as head of this Vatican Bank from the Knights of Malta was criticized because he was a weapon dealer. And you can't put a weapon dealer as head of the Vatican Bank. It seemed inconsistent also for the believers, no?
Yeah.
Pope Francis says, please change this thing, and they put another guy. But this guy actually is not doing anything. He's still the guy from the Knights of Malta. He's still carrying on, just as a facade thing. So this demonstrates really the mentality of what's going on in the Vatican nowadays with Pope Francis. A facade that is more important of the actual change. So if something, often I noticed also in the researches I've done for my book, that Pope Francis was just doing something to save the appearances, not to really change things. So this is my impression from the work I have done and conducted for this book.
I understand.
He's like claiming a lot of great things, and he often seems to even publicly criticize, no, the corrupted sides of the Vatican.
Mm-hmm.
But it is instrumental for his own power.
Yeah, yeah, it's for the perception of the public theater, you know?
Yes. So, like I was saying before, Monte dei Paschi led to an operation so complex in the end, after this guy was suicided, basically. He was killed, but, you know. Then the operation led to his best friend, close collaborator, Stefano Bisi, to be elected Grand Master of the Italian Freemasons, the Grand Orient of Italy. Now he's the Grand Master now, and this guy has not talked anymore or talked in any way about this David Rossi being kicked, thrown out the window. A bank which is founded 20 years before America was even discovered in 1472 becomes basically on the brink, was nearly risking a total collapse. And if a bank like that collapses, of course, it will have create problems in all the financial system worldwide, no? Which is interconnected. So the Queen of England was very worried, and she decided with her loyal Freemason of the city to visit the Pope and to go to Rome herself. So there was actually this visit of the Queen, which was supposed to be made when Ratzinger actually abdicated, and then it was posticipated to the year after, and was still to do with this great interest of money. You have to understand that the Bank of England has some very big interest also in banks like the Monte dei Paschi.
For sure. Absolutely.
So there is an administration of the patrimony. I mean, when you are administering the patrimony of the Holy See and you find yourself basically in the office of the Roman Curia with a situation that in some cases, you know, with some orders, is actually in total bankruptcy. There is certain orders of the Catholic Church, like the Salesians, which Tarcisio Bertone is part of, for example, which have a lot of economic problems at the time, at the moment, and risk bankruptcy, a lot of their institutions, a lot of their, hospital things, because these orders, they don't just have churches. They have hospitals, universities, and all kinds of centers and things,
Yeah,
so
sure.
It's a big thing. It's not just a bunch of churches. No. It's a learning institutions. Can go anything from elementary school to the school teacher to the university. I mean, the Catholic is a large world made of all kinds of businesses, like the Compagnie delle Opere that deals, for example, with all the trips of the pilgrims, and they are all connected to the Vatican Bank.
That's why it's very important to mention it. The tentacles go far and wide.
Yes, of course. Sorry if you should have probably mentioned to me earlier, but I was less tired.
Oh, no problem.
Very late for me.
No problem. We're going to let you go soon.
I'm losing lucidity on the subject.
Yeah, it's getting late in Italy, I'm sure. But I wanted to talk to you real quick before you go about, I know we talked about it earlier, we touched on it. Why, explain for the audience why they are conjuring demonic entities.
Well, in the Vatican?
Yes.
I explained in my book, I invite people to buy my book to discover also the places where these demons are evoked, the places which are near where the Pope resides in the summer, in the area in the Roman castles near Rome. Why they do it? Because it gives them power. It creates that a link between the members that officiate this kind of thing. And also, usually they celebrate the satanic masses with the priest of the Catholic Church as the main priest of the satanic mass, because this gives an even higher power to the whole operation, meaning that you are mixing the egregore of the Christian Catholic reality, where you have the old lady praying the rosary, with the satanic element, with the transgression, with the priest that wants to find the transgression, wants to rape little boys, wants to go with men, with women, wants to basically, and this energy, this pulse of transgression, then goes into an egregore, an entity which they use for their for achieving more and more power. So
yes.
If there was a question, and the question was by you, why they do it, is to achieve more power in
right.
The terrestrial of course. Not
That's
in
what I wanted the audience to understand.
Yes.
Is there anything else? I can't think right now. I guess I'm getting tired too. Is there anything else that you think it's important for us to cover?
Okay, just to chat, ecco, that thing that, let's say, parenthesis, that chapter about what is the corruption within the Vatican Bank.
Yes.
Let's say that in my book, I also bring the testimony of Vincenzo Calcara, who became a trader of the mafia and a so-called pentito, who actually stated that he delivered in person to a high prelate the sum of 10 billion lire at the time. This large sum of money was the result of criminal trafficking by the current head of Cosa Nostra, which is the Sicilian boss of bosses, known as Matteo Massina Denaro. So the number one of the mafia will give his money to the Vatican. And this is done still up to recently, and it involved also a bishop in particular from Trapani, which calls Michiche. And there is a whole tentacles of the mafia linked with the Vatican that basically are the ones that, you know, create all this this tradition that we have also seen in some way, the Godfather Part 3, no, with the movie. You can see some of these connections portrayed in a fictional way, but quite clearly,
sure.
No?
Sure, yeah, sure.
And then regarding instead the last question, which I would like to answer to close this interview, would be en passé the role of general, this general who is in charge of the Vatican security, which is Domenico Gianni, who is not only a Knights of Malta, but he is one of the men on Licio Gelli. And towards the end of the book, I also talk about Licio Gelli, and I talk about the link that this Pope actually has with the OTO and with the saints of the religion of the OTO, because this Pope's lineage comes from Cardinal Rampolla, which basically was an OTO and a Freemason. And so his lineage is directly from the lineage of a Satanist. Another thing which also I talked about in this book is the death of William Kennedy, who was the cousin of the Kennedys. So William H. Kennedy basically was the guy who had written some books that was quite active during for a period in the conspiracy cycles, and I had written a book with Malachi Martin, another Jesuit called Al Kunz, and Charles Fiore. And this is truly groundbreaking information that this William H. Kennedy put on book, then ended up with the death of all these people, including himself. 48-year-old William H. Kennedy died in really what I think is mysterious circumstances not so long ago. So I have wanting to dedicate some of my words to this person and of this William Kennedy, because people also, he was quite known in the conspiracy community, you know, when I first started, you know, with people like Greg Zismansky and so on. And the fact that he has written about the Vatican and all the Vatican Lucifer Lodge in the Vatican and what is really going on in the U.S. Catholic world and all the perversion in the seminars and everything that was going on there, and that and the fact that him and his Jesuit collaborator that died, I think is very suspicious, no? Don't you think?
Sure, yeah? I do too.
I mean,
there's been a lot of suspicious deaths around the whole scenario.
I mean, nobody has really mentioned, I mean, he was a friend of Stanley Montet. I also went on Stanley Montet's show. But nobody really has talked about this guy's work since he died, and his books are now nearly impossible to find, and nobody also knew during his life that he was actually related. He was the cousin of Bob Kennedy, of John F. Kennedy.
Certainly, the New World Order certainly has it out for the Kennedys, that's for sure.
Definitely. I mean, even this less known member of the Kennedys.
Yes.
So then, as I said, the last thing is instead this link with Cardinal Rampolla and with the OTO and the saints of Crowley's religion, which I show with the document in my book, so people can actually check out the document that I published in my book, which was originally published in a book that is now sold for $1,000 a copy, which is OTO Rituals and Sex Magic by Theodore Rose and Aleister Crowley, that is being now banned by the OTO and was originally printed by Pentacle Enterprise in 1999. And basically I print this list of saints and members of the OTO, and in this list of members of the OTO appears the name of Cardinal Rampolla, which is the guy which lineage depends Pope Francis. So there is a direct link here with the OTO and the Pope Francis. You understand? It's quite incredible. Nobody has really talked about it, but there is a link. And it's a lineage, which of course, then if you have a lineage that depends on somebody who was a Freemason, an OTO member, I don't know how genuine your apostolic lineage really is.
It certainly carries more value, you know, to them about your lineage.
Well, the lineage is always important, both in secret societies, religion, and so on. I mean, the lineage is all for some mystery schools, and even for a martial arts school, a lineage is everything. So lineages are very important, and to know that Pope Francis' lineage is connected with Cardinal Rampolla, who was actually accused by, he was supposed to become Pope, and he was stopped from becoming Pope because they discovered he was a Freemason, and this is official. I mean, it's quite a big thing. So I want to just close this interview reminding all the people that are listening that you can find all this excellent information on my book and read it from a book called Pope Francis, The Last Pope on CCC Publishing, and that in the end you will also discover what is really going on with this universal religion that is coming together and that has decided to have as its headquarters the Palace of Peace and Reconciliation, which is based with the Pyramid of Peace in Astana. And this is quite interesting because a lot of people know this Astana as the capital of the Illuminati, no? Which is in Kazakhstan, the country of Borat, commonly known as Borat. But in reality, in the capital of Kazakhstan, there is this great project which apparently wants to put together all this religion for the New World Order.
One more quick question. I don't want to keep you that much longer because I know it's late. In your opinion, who is the most powerful demon that is causing the most trouble on the planet today?
I describe this in Volume 4, and it's definitely Set, which is commonly referred to as Satan, but is known in ancient Egyptian mythology as Set. Set is really the turning point in its most ancient form, no? Described like this. The Age of Set really started and kicked in between 1974 and 1975. Of course, the Age of Satan kicks in 1966. In fact, we have the foundation of the Church of Satan. But it's true that in 1974, the revelation of Set becomes stronger, the return to the ancient cult of Set becomes stronger. In fact, in 1975, then it manifests fully with the Temple of Set of Lieutenant Colonel Michael Aquino. And at that point, we can definitely say that the most powerful being used at the moment is Set.
Very interesting. Thank you for saying that. And I want to say to you, Leo, you're very brave for bringing this information in all of your books to the public. And it bothers me when people say, why isn't Leo dead? You've paid a very heavy price. You know, you've had a lot of attacks on your life and been messed with several different ways. So I don't think people should think that you've had an easy time of it. That's for sure.
Yes, well, that's one of the reasons why I tend to really not want my information out for free on the internet, because I think that here I am risking my life and they're making it impossible for me. So at least if I am able to write these books, they will not be able to put them down from a website that can be closed like they did in the past, because I've had websites closed down. People can just go and check. You know,
my website was closed down 3 times last year and wiped completely. They certainly come after you if you're doing good
work. My only solution for all this is writing books, hard copy books, not virtual books, not digital books, but paper books that people can keep in their houses beyond the digital age. This is a book that will stay in history, and people need to have it, to buy it, and to keep it as something that they can use to really challenge any Catholic today and say, listen, maybe you should rethink your position. And even myself, who I was born Catholic, I have learned to rethink my position, and I can't believe in a church like this today.
Absolutely. Well, we will include your Amazon link, unless there's a different link you'd like me to include in the YouTube description.
No. I would like to also give you this other link, which is...
Put it in the chat box for me.
The Last Pope on CCC Publishing. The actual website, which I want to give to all of you, which is CCC Publishing San Francisco. This is the company with Brad Olson, which has had the possibility to give me the possibility to bring you these excellent books in the English-speaking market for the first time.
Great.
And thanks to their courage, because there has been nobody else before them that has really seriously wanted to challenge the system in the English-speaking world by bringing out this kind of books. I mean, I'm impressed by the courage they're demonstrating, because it's not an easy, and they will see it's more and more difficult, because then when the subjects of these books start really moving the minds of the people, then you have to understand that this is not just a book you are publishing and selling to the people. You are trying to change and manifest something in humanity, in the kingdom of God and of righteousness, and you are ending that Orwellian dictatorship by just with your conscience and with your knowledge of these things. You can position yourself finally out of this dystopian nightmare. I mean, I really think that people, up until now, I didn't have one single person that has picked up this book and has said this book is rubbish. So
that's right.
I still haven't had this happening, because it's hard facts, evidence backed up by sources, credible citation, witnesses, photos, and so on. So, I mean, it's...
Well, the truth is very much connected to the Creator and Divinity, so good for you.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
You're very welcome. Well, Christy, like to say hello? Is she there?
Yes, I will pass you on to Christy in a second. And the last thing I want to say was that we are very happy for also what's coming up with the January 2016 in volume one of my confessions, because Pope Francis, the last Pope, Catherine, is an appetizer compared to the book that is coming out.
Oh boy. So, I can't wait.
That would be very good for all of you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, pass you on to Christy.
Okay.